Welcome to Healthy Her, the podcast designed to inspire women to lead lives filled with health and happiness. I'm Dr. Amy Brenner, your host discussing nutrition, hormones, aesthetics, sexual health, and more. Join us each week as we dive into feeling better, looking better, and living better. Hi, podcast listeners. I can't tell you how excited I am for you to hear what we have in store for you on this podcast. We have Dr. Alexandra Stockwell, and we're going to be talking about intimacy and relationships. And we have never talked about this on the podcast. And after Dr. Stockwell contacted me, I have listened to her episodes. First, I like to do my homework before I bring somebody on the podcast. But then I just became so intrigued as just a married woman that's been married. It'll be 22 years here that I've been married. So then I just started listening to a lot of her stuff, following her Facebook page, and just became so intrigued with all of the information she has out there. I think the hardest thing is how we're going to boil it down to keep this conversation to 45 minutes, because I think we could probably talk about this topic for hours and hours. Welcome, Dr. Stockwell.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So we were just talking just for 2 minutes before we hit the record button, and I asked you, are you an MD? So I'm going to give our listeners your background of what you used to do, what your training is, and how you became known as the intimacy doctor.
Absolutely. So I met my husband the first week of medical school, and while going through medical school, we got together, we got married. I had my first child just after my third year of medical school, my second just before starting my internship, and trained in family medicine. And I had a small holistic practice north of Boston. But the thing I also want to say is that because we met in medical school and training and had babies pretty soon thereafter, for about the first 10 years of our marriage, I always thought that when we had more time together, then our romantic, sensual, sexual, passionate intimacy would be on a par with the soul connection we had, because we really were compatible, best friends, made financial decisions together easily, like all of the things that can really trip a couple up. I'm not saying it was, you know, unicorns and rainbows, but we found our way to really connect. And so I just thought, once we weren't sleep deprived, we had our evenings and weekends available, once we had more time, well, what was going on in the bedroom would really blossom and flourish. And that is not what happened. Once we were both attendings and I wasn't working evenings or any weekends and he mostly wasn't, our sex life was kind of the same as it had been, which was functional, good, but nothing that the poets describe, nothing that like had
not me... what you see in movies and reading books.
Yeah, not like as soon as I was done, I was looking forward to the next time. Not at all. So just skipping lots of details in my story, this was something that I really wanted to crack the code for myself personally in our marriage. My parents were divorced when I was a child. His parents were divorced when he was a child. And I really didn't have any inspiring role models around me. And plus, you never know what's happening in the bedroom in a relationship anyway. So once I really kind of found my way personally, I actually, as part of that, enrolled in a very in-depth training that was long and thorough, that was for lay people and simultaneously trained coaches. And at the time, you know, I took my MD seriously. I had no idea what a coach was. This was a while ago. And that had not, like, I wasn't interested at all, but I've always been interested in learning and educational models. And so I was like, how do people teach how to help people? And I went to the teaching lab and I just thought, oh, I have come home. This is actually what I want to do. And so long before many physicians became coaches and physician burnout wasn't really a thing, it was a courageous move for me because I didn't know anyone who'd voluntarily left the practice of medicine, but I transitioned and really love serving individuals and couples because I've come to understand very deeply that having a fantastic relationship is a learnable skill. And the main reason that we have this epidemic of meh relationships is that people haven't actually learned how to do it any differently. And so, really, everything that I offer is a form of education for people who want to be students of marital passion and depth of connection and intimacy.
Awesome. So what I love that you bring to the table, and we talked again a little bit about this off air, is in our practice, we do all of the medical stuff, the physical stuff. So we'll balance your hormones. So if hot flashes are keeping you up at night, we can fix you. If you're too tired during the day because you have hypothyroidism, we can help you. If maybe your weight is interfering with your self-image because you have insulin resistance. Like we have so many tools in our toolbox to help with weight loss. Testosterone therapy. I'm a huge proponent of that. I think that can help so many women, and men. But what we don't do in our practice is what you do is sometimes, and it's not the only answer, and that what you offer, and I know this because over the last month I've been listening to all of your stuff and reading all of your stuff, is this is something that you offer that can help people that already have the medical part dialed in and they just want to continue to work on their relationship, or somebody that is having problems in their relationship, and maybe they've come to a practice like ours, and they've done the medical stuff, but it's just not enough, and they're still having concerns. So we don't offer what you offer in our practice, and I tell people that all of the time, is balancing your hormones and balancing the medical stuff is important, but there's still so much more that goes into having great intimacy and a great sexual relationship with your partner. So
I love how you said that, and I think it's so intriguing actually how many different services that you offer so that it really there's a way in which wellness from a medical channel is really available because you have access to so many different tools and trainings, and that can take people very far. And then comes the fact that intimacy and sex, it's about how you feel. And there's a way in which so much of the information about sex and sexual activities and happiness in this realm, it's related to things you do, you know, new sexual positions, new sexual toys, lingerie, or medications. And I'm not knocking any one of those when it helps, but it doesn't fundamentally get to the matter that intimacy is about how you feel. And a couple can be having sex and be doing, you know, whatever particular activities they're doing. And it can be the most glorious, erotically satisfying, incredible, passionate bonding experience. And those very same activities, the person can be, you know, thinking about their to-do list. And I just yesterday came across a study, 3,300 more or less respondents, and 50% of them said that they experienced boredom during sex. Like, there's no medical intervention which takes care of boredom in sex. And the lack of erotic energy, it's different than just being able to lubricate and maintain an erection, like that is not inherently, it's a necessary conduit, but it doesn't actually tap into erotic energy. So what does, right?
Yeah.
So for that, I want to like zoom way out of the where we're talking right now and just say that far and away, the most common relationship advice that is given is that if you want a good marriage, you have to be good at compromise. That compromise is what creates happiness in a marriage, and that is completely wrong. Compromise contributes to pleasant, bland companionship, but compromise does not contribute to passion and ongoing evolution and just erotic gratification at all. Actually, the name of my book is Uncompromising Intimacy, and I talk a lot about stopping compromise, but I do want to just define my terms because when I think of compromise, I think of withholding your desires, your internal experience, what matters to you, withholding it so that your partner is more comfortable. And so when I talk about being uncompromising, I do not mean in the sense that you always get your own way, you become demanding my way or the highway. That's not the sense of uncompromising that I mean. I mean that instead of withholding who you are so your partner is more comfortable, you learn to share the truth of who you are and what you desire in a way that your partner can hear it. And this is a transformational pivot when it comes to really small things like where you're going to go out for dinner, and big things like where you're going to live, and how many children you're going to have, or whatever it is. I think there's a way in which both men and women, in different ways, just get so used to suppressing what matters to them. And as human beings, there's not some magical switch that we can flip when we get to the bedroom. So if we're in the habit of withholding aspects of who we are in our day-to-day lives, we can't get to the bedroom and then be like fully expressed and totally present and bring our whole selves to the encounter because how you do anything is how you do everything. And so, really, when we learn to open and share more of who we are in a very connected, calibrated, loving, respectful way, well, that is actually the secret sauce that heats things up in the bedroom more than anything else, so long as all the medical matters have been attended to previously.
So what if you, before we even say like, okay, fine, I will speak up, I'll say what I am looking for, is what if you have a couple that is just so disconnected, whether they haven't been physically intimate in years, or when they are intimate, it's just, more of a, okay, well, this is what we do on Saturday, and it's more just going through the motions
You're
like it
so
is.
good at evoking both those scenarios. I know exactly what you mean.
Like, or it's just kind of going through the motions, like brushing your teeth of, okay, well, this is something we have to do once a week because it's kind of part of my duties of, I don't even know where to start to say you're talking about compromise. Like, also this topic is so uncomfortable. You and I, this is what we do for a living. Like, we could talk about sex to anybody. In fact, sometimes when I say stuff to my friends, they're shocked that those words like even came out of my mouth. So if you're talking to somebody like, look, my husband and I never even talk about sex. So how do we even like talk about compromise or uncompromising when we've never even had a conversation about sex before or intimacy?
Okay, I love that you presence that because most couples, whether they're having good sex or not, are way more comfortable having sex than talking about it. So what you've described is not the least bit unusual. And so if you someone is listening and that's your situation, like there are lots of people listening who are in that situation, and that's not inherently a problem at all. In fact, I'm reminded of one of the first couples that I ever coached. It was so informative in the way that, you know, happens when it's the first person, one of the first couples, because when they came to me, they hadn't had sex in 9 months. And they had a child in middle school and a child in high school. And so from the outside, everything looked great. But once the kids were in bed or doing their own thing and it was just the two of them, they always would just hang out in different rooms until it was time to go to sleep. And they were, you know, they weren't thinking about divorce. They were just wondering how to find their way back to one another. And so I'd been a practicing physician, but I was a new relationship and intimacy coach. And so I just knew that, first of all, for a committed couple to have a third person involved in their marriage, we needed to build rapport before getting right into sex. And they needed to build rapport and reconnect emotionally just so that we could have these conversations. That was what I was thinking at the time. So basically, that's what happened. We didn't focus on sex at all. We focused on what her experience was in the relationship and what his was. And after about three sessions, they had so much rapport and they were sitting closer to one another during the session and smiling. And so I thought, okay, now we'll talk about sex. So I said, and they were a very discreet couple, so I was discreet too. I said, well, let's move into other topics. And they both looked at me. They didn't know what I meant. They're like, I was like, well, you know, you contacted me. And she caught it and she just started laughing and said, oh, we're all set. Because as soon as they connected emotionally, the rest just took care of itself. Now, I find that to be the case more or less 75 to 80% of the time when I coach couples, that once the emotional intimacy opens to a depth they haven't had before, sensual intimacy follows close behind. Sometimes we do actually need to talk about sex, but what I really want to convey is that being willing to expand the emotional intimacy is really the best lubricant. So, for this couple that you've described, they're disconnected and don't know where to begin. Do not begin with sex. That will be jarring. That does not fit with the culture of the relationship. Just start with being curious and putting attention on one another, not in like a spotlight creepy way, but just genuinely be interested. Ask, there are lots of different card decks with questions that are super useful for this, with questions that can have any flavor, like something more whimsical, like if you were to have dinner with a celebrity, or live or dead, who would it be, and what would you want to ask them? Or what was the highlight of your week? Or if you could have a different profession, what would it be? Or if we didn't live here, where would you want to live? Or, I mean, it doesn't even matter what the question is, as long as you're actually interested, because connecting it with what I said earlier, this is basically providing a very gentle and like easy invitation for your partner to just bring more of who they are to the relationship, to the conversations you're having with one another.
Do you think that this kind of scenario, or what are the statistics? Do you think this happens to most people where they get to this place? I know that you mentioned you kind of, your relationship all wasn't always, you know, fireworks in the bedroom. Certainly mine wasn't. Like I call it the blurry years of when I had three little kids that were all 18 months apart, and I was working as a OBGYN, staying up all night, and like, things were not good then. And I think of out of most people I know that they probably go through a phase in their relationship. So, is this something that happens to everybody?
You know, There are not a lot of studies because there aren't a lot of companies that would want to invest in this information because there is not a pill to cure it. So the one study that we have, which is related to this, is from John Gottman, who has studied many, many, many couples and is very clear that one of the best positive predictors of long-term happiness and passion is talking about the sex that you're having. It's like 91% of couples with long-lasting happy marriages have conversation about their experiences, which really isn't what you're talking about. It's just that we know that most couples don't have these conversations. Without being too scientific, because I don't have actual data, I think of it as a kind of epidemic of conflict-free, passion-free relationships. And in terms of is this common or normal, I think one of the fundamental contributing factors is that we are used to thinking of most areas of our life that are important as realms in which we expect to learn and grow. So when it comes to our career, when it comes to parenting, when it comes to finances, when it comes to the house we're living in, like we expect to have more in our 30s and in our 20s and more in our 40s and our 30s when it comes to experience and growth. And there's a way in which somehow or another in our like cultural collective consciousness, we don't think of sex and sexuality as a place where there's the same exciting learning and growth. I think many people think of the sex they have in their 20s or early in their relationship, whenever that is, as like the best sex. And if you don't put attention, if you're not a student of your own bedroom experiences, then the sex you experience early in the relationship is the best sex of your life, but it definitely doesn't need to be that. If you allow, in this way that I refer to as uncompromising intimacy, if you allow the growth and evolution in your sex life to happen, well, then it gets better and better. Not that every experience is better and better, but overall it trends towards more sensation, more passion, more tenderness, more self-expression.
Now you referenced like other aspects of your life, and as I look at my life or just people's in general, is as it relates to finances, is as your finances get better, or you usually get a helper, you have a financial advisor. If you're really into your working out, like I've had many trainers pay for gym memberships, like where I invest in kind of getting stronger, getting faster, that kind of thing. As in my career, I've had business coaches. I've invested, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in my education to become a better doctor. But how many people invest in, growing their marriage or, this isn't what we're talking about, but growing as a parent?
I love the way you're making that point. I think it's so important. And another aspect of that, which distinguishes both parenting and communication and sex in a relationship, is that we tend to look for help when there are real problems. Because what you're saying, of course, with a business coach or financial advisor, like that's to help go from good to great. And mostly, I think when it comes to support in our most important relationships, both parenting and romantic partner, people do think to get help when things are bad and they want to get to good. But the most like profound transformational impact is in going from good to great in these arenas.
Do you find that most of the clients that work with you are in a meh relationship that are on the verge of splitting up, or people that do want to go from good to great?
Well, for me personally, when I talk, when I all of my social media, my book, and so forth, I'm really interested in serving the people who want to go from good to great. So I definitely have people who reach out, the day after an affair came to light, or because this is the last straw, and they want a level of skill and experience, and they resonate with my message. So I definitely work with people in the bad to good category, but it's pretty quick, quicker than people expect, that we're really working on the good to great, because they're often the same skills. It's just that people aren't really using them once things are good or good enough. And the other part of that, which relates to your insightful observation about getting guidance and support, is that in these other areas of life, finances, career, paying the bills, being out of shape, we get feedback as soon as there's an issue. If we don't pay a bill, we get a reminder, we get a late fee, we still don't pay the bill, you know, collections comes. We have so much capacity to tolerate a lack of really alive, passionate relationships. Like, we can put that on the back burner and focus on all the things calling for our attention. And we all have so many in our lives. And like, our relationships can tolerate a neglect and attention for a very long time. So I think one of the key things in terms of working with people who want to go from good to great is that they really need to make a decision to prioritize growing in their relationship, because the relationship doesn't punish them or give them feedback for not doing it until things are pretty severe.
What would you say to somebody that's just like, look, this just makes me really uncomfortable. Like, I grew up with, we didn't talk about sex. Sex was bad. This sounds like, you know, are you going to tell me to like get a bunch of sex toys, which makes me so uncomfortable. You know, I'm just, you know, not into any of that kinky stuff, or, I don't know. It's just so uncomfortable. I wouldn't even know where to start.
Well, the place to start is feeling more without changing anything else. So if it's a woman who comes to me saying exactly what you've just said, I personally will never say, go get sex toys. And I will never start with, go buy some lingerie. Like, none of that matters. What matters is that it's our bodies and our sensuality that experience sexual connection. So most of us are disconnected from our bodies and in our heads and thinking about what needs to happen and how it's going to happen and all of that. And so to just slow down in life, not all day, but, you know, for moments in life, and experience the actual sensual experiences you're having. So actually, I coached a couple, they were both physicians, and she was working really hard, had three young children, and really just had no idea how to start. Her husband loved sex and loved her, and she was motivated to be able to find a way to enjoy sex more for his sake. And yeah, very conservative upbringing, no desire to discuss things. And so I started by saying to her, when do you experience pleasure? And she couldn't think of anything. I dug a little further. It turns out she loves coffee. So how did we begin? We began with my saying, okay, enjoy the whole experience. Pick your favorite cup that feels like good on your lip as you drink. Pay attention to that. As you pour the cup, you know, the coffee from the pot, like, enjoy the sound of the beverage being poured and the aroma of the coffee, and even like the nice shape of the arc of the liquid, and then hold it. And as you drink it, just savor it. Don't be on your phone and don't be focused on all the things you need to do. Like, let yourself have a sensual experience. And by a sensual experience, I don't mean something super erotic. I mean something that is visual, oral, olfactory, taste, or touch. Like, we need to experience the sensations in our body. And that's the place to start. You don't need, if you're a woman in a relationship like we've just heard, you don't need to tell anybody anything. Just take a hot bath and pay attention to how you actually feel. If someone actually takes the time to, breathe and bring their attention to their sensual experiences, that already enhances sex. Because if you can do it while you're drinking coffee or while you're sitting on a park bench or eating a bowl of soup or washing your face in the morning, if you can do it then, it's not that big a transition to pay more attention to what you're actually feeling with your senses while you're naked in bed with your partner. But just as really with most life skills, it's very valuable to start small and then expand from there. I think starting with, smelling a flower and feeling the petals on your face, this is what opens up the path to really more deliciousness.
Yeah. I think you can take that concept even into just all of your relationships of just being present, of mindfulness, of just, and I know I was, I mean, this is something I really struggle with and still have to work on, of just being present in the moment. And when you're, even if I'm just having a simple conversation with my daughter from college, to really listen to what she's saying on the phone instead of trying to do 14 things at once is, it's not, what you're saying can go into not just your sexual relationship, but even with relationships with all the people in your life.
Yes, I'm right there with you. I have four children and two are out of the house, and it is such an interesting thing to maintain the relationship through the phone call with like how much multitasking am I going to do? And sometimes I multitask and sometimes I don't. The way that I think about the phenomenon that you've just described is to prioritize connection over content. And that is true whether it's connecting with a child in college calling home on the phone, whether it's just a simple conversation with a spouse at the end of the day, or it's a time of conflict where you really have different perspectives on something that's important to both of you, to bring your attention to the quality of the connection between the two of you and not lose sight of it while being so focused on the particular content. That is also a way to really deepen a relationship in a kind of mysterious but very impactful way.
But what do you do with a couple that's working with you? Is it Zoom calls? Is it one-on-one? Are there group sessions?
Well, I work with couples all over the world. I've been working on Zoom since 2017. I used to say to people when we were going to work together, "Have you heard of Zoom?" But with the pandemic, I of course stopped asking that question. But yeah, I work with couples all over the world. And the first thing is an initial consultation where I speak with both of them together. And then based on what they want, everything begins with desire. Sometimes people don't know what they want, they just know what they don't want, and that's an okay starting place too. But just based on what they want, then I design a custom package for them, which always consists of coaching the couple together every week. And then sometimes there are additional sessions with one of them individually or the other one based on what they want to work on. But I find it very, very rich to coach couples together for a few different reasons. One is it keeps it honest. I do also work with individuals, but with an individual, he or she can say, "Well, this is how it is, and this is what the other person says." But when you work with a couple together and they're each representing their own experience, it keeps it very real and very honest. And it also, there's something very profound in knowing what your partner's next growth step is in communication, for example. Like for, I'm coaching a couple currently where she's very critical and has a kind of biting tone. And so he feels disrespected. And even if he doesn't mind the requests she's making, he really can't stand how she makes them. But through his being present while I coach her on this, he develops compassion and understanding of what's really at issue and how it's not actually fueled by her disrespect. It's fueled by her sense of not having control in a situation where she really wants a particular outcome. So I don't know if that's exactly answered your question, but with every couple, it's somewhat different. What's not different is that we coach on Zoom and then things evolve actually quite efficiently. I would say consistently, couples are surprised when they actually put attention on their marriage, how quickly they get positive results. That always happens because we're so used to thinking you can't really do anything about it, but you can actually have a lot of efficiency in this. But I think of intimate relationships as the ultimate vehicle for personal growth. And with every couple, the way they actually transform the dynamic into something so much better is for each of them to take responsibility. And often couples don't really understand what that means. And so to witness how the spouse is going to take responsibility is really, it changes things because people are used to blaming their partner, wanting their partner to change. But to learn how to look and see, oh, how can I show up so that this goes differently? And have both of them asking that question is very powerful.
How would somebody know if, because all relationships have issues, whether it's financial issues or anger issues, or they're just not communicating. Do I need to see a marriage counselor or somebody like yourself that's an intimacy doctor, or is it one and the same?
You know, I think of the question you just asked as basically the question of what's the difference between therapy and coaching. And so I think therapy is for people who want to more or less look backwards and see what happened in order to understand what brought them to the situation they're in, what happened in their childhood, what happened between them, so that they're not as connected as they want to be. And of course, there are always exceptions to that. But in contrast, coaching, especially the way that I do it, is I always start with, what do you want? What is your desire? What do you want to be experiencing with one another? What do you want to create together? And then sometimes there are things from the past that come up on the way to doing that, but I'm not really interested in delving into the past for its own sake. I'm looking for actionable ways that are easily implemented to create new experiences with one another. So if that's the kind of thing that somebody wants, then by all means, reach out to me. The other thing that I would say is that, I work with couples who are motivated to do the work in order to have the results that they want. So often they're ambitious, they're successful in their careers, they know how to make things happen in other areas of their life. And the only thing they want to know is how to make things happen in the realm of intimacy. And so you can absolutely hack your life skills, and I show you how. And then I would say one other reason to pursue working with me or someone else is, especially in the situation where one partner feels like they are kind of the parent in the relationship, guiding things, holding things, envisioning the progress, because even if somebody has a lot of great ideas, that is a passion killer to have a parent-child dynamic. And so I work with couples where, you know, she could be very powerful and help other people with all kinds of things, but for her to be able to relax and just be herself, and for him to relax and be himself, and I guide the process, That is often far more beneficial than smart, competent people anticipate because they're used to handling things themselves.
All right, that's great. I wanted to ask you about two questions. I listened to one of your podcasts, and hopefully I'll do a good job of explaining my question, but you made an analysis about the four love languages, and you compared it to kind of what people, almost like languages of how people are sexually. And do you remember what podcast I'm talking about?
Was it one with a guest or not? Because I've done it in two different
Oh,
ways.
goodness, I'm not sure.
Okay.
But
Well, anyway, I know what you're talking about.
my takeaway was, and I don't remember what my sex love language was, but my takeaway was it concerns me about all of the senses. And so what I took about it personally is it affects me if my bedroom is a mess. Like if my bedroom is clean and maybe our cleaning lady came that day and all the clutter's put away and our bed is made and there's music and there's candles, that goes so much better for me than when my room is a mess. Then
Yes, I remember exactly what you're talking about.
but there was so much more to it, as it there were different kinds of people sexually, almost of sexual languages, like there are in the four love languages. I don't know if you could expand upon that, but that just
Yes,
one
absolutely.
really hit home for me, because I was talking to my husband about it. He goes, "Well, I just don't understand. Why does it matter if the bedroom's clean or not?" I'm like, "I don't know. It just does for me."
I'm so glad you asked that. And a way that I want to get into that conversation is to say that as long as everything has been already addressed medically, I think libido mismatch is entirely a myth. And the reason that I say that is that a lot of people who have low desire, I don't believe that they fundamentally have low desire. It's just that what they're being offered is not what they want more of. So if somebody wants to be having more sex with their partner, then put your attention on what would make it irresistible, what would make it more enticing, what would make it more appealing. If you're not getting what you want, there's nothing wrong with your partner. It's that what you're offering isn't exciting him or her. So, similarly, with the five love languages, the idea, of course, is that we all experience love in different ways. Some people feel loved with physical touch, some people feel loved with words of affirmation. And if you give someone words of affirmation, and their love language is physical touch, it's nice, but it just doesn't really matter. It doesn't have them feel more loved until you give them a hug. And then it's like, oh, their heart opens and they feel so loved. Well, similarly, what you're talking about is known as the erotic blueprints. And there are five of them, I think. As I go through them, I'll figure out the number. But we're all wired differently, and most often, couples, the individuals in a relationship are paired with different erotic blueprints. And so you need to get to know your own well, and you also need to get to know your partner's well. So, of the erotic blueprints, there is the sexual blueprint, which is most represented in porn, and there's the stereotypical guy where he just sees an attractive woman and he is ready to go. And there are women who have that erotic blueprint as well. I can say a lot more, but I just want to like spell out what the different ones are. So that one, it's very visually motivated. Like if the body's attractive, let's go. Like the juices are flowing, meaning the sexual erotic blueprint, if you have that, you don't need a lot of foreplay because why not just get into it? In contrast, there's the sensual erotic blueprint where all of the sensory input contributes to readiness and desire and availability to relax and enjoy the sensual experience. And the scene needs to be set. The environment is not so important for someone with a sexual erotic blueprint, but for a sensual erotic blueprint, yes, you know, candles and the right lighting, the right music, of, you know, if not clean sheets, certainly the bed made, the room in order, because the erotic stimulation comes through all of the senses. Like someone with a sexual erotic blueprint, if there's like a weird smell, that's not going to inhibit them. But someone with a sensual erotic blueprint, you've got to handle that smell or that sensory input, which is unpleasant. And so this is more stereotypically how women are thought to be in their sexuality. Again, there are men who have a sensual erotic blueprint, but anyway, typically we think of women being this way, and we need romance and, you know, flowers at the date and a kind of chivalry, pulling the chair out when you sit down at the table. All of this contributes to being ready to respond to erotic energy and sexual activity. Another one is the energetic erotic blueprint. And the classic example of the energetic erotic blueprint is the person who sees someone across the room and starts to feel tingling. In other words, someone with an erotic, an energetic erotic blueprint responds to the energy. So if someone's in a bad mood, they're never going to be attracted to them. But if someone, it's more mysterious, it's more nuanced, it's more subtle, and they need time to enjoy the anticipation and just the energy, the energetics of the scenario. So if you pair someone with an energetic erotic blueprint with a sexual erotic blueprint, and they're unaware of the blueprints and these principles, it will be extremely frustrating for at least one of them, and probably both of them, because the energetic erotic blueprint person, they need a little flirtation, a little mystery, a little bit of kind of that if you think of two magnets, the way they're like, they dance with one another from a distance until they actually connect, whereas the sexual blueprint, they're like ready to go. What's all this? Like, sex doesn't start until you're actually touching one another. For someone with an energetic blueprint, oh, sex starts long before. And then there's the kinky blueprint, which I think in general, kink is just greatly misunderstood in our society. We tend to associate it with BDSM and pain and a kind of domination. And that is certainly what kink is for some people, but kink can be as simple as breaking a taboo. So it can be kinky to be at a party and go make out with your spouse in the bathroom or at the end of the hall. Kink can be any kind of playing at the edges of what you're supposed to do, and that can be super stimulating. And then there's the shapeshifter erotic blueprint, which is someone who can shift between all these different blueprints. So I suppose maybe it's, at least at first glance, most appealing to have a spouse who's a shapeshifter, because they can meet you wherever you are. And with each of these erotic blueprints, there are ways to work with any of the other erotic blueprints when you really understand them. And I think the way you introduced this was so beautiful, because, yeah, your husband can think, why is she rejecting me? But he also can think, oh, let me see what the bedroom looks like before I start to initiate.
Yeah. I loved that podcast. Like even just years ago, whenever we learned about love languages, that was so insightful. Of is it just helps. I thought that helped so much with my relationships, and hearing that was the first time I ever heard of the what do you call them? The
Erotic blueprints.
erotic blueprints. I just thought that was so insightful, which again, looking at my own is I'm like, is that why I like vacation sex and hotel sex so much better? Because they clean your room every day and there's no clutter there. Same thing, like even being on vacation, I'm like, can we clean up your suitcase? Like, I don't want to look at it. Like,
Yes.
which gets me to my next question is when our internet went down and we had a break, is I saw you actually send out an email about going on vacations with just your spouse. And when we've always done that as a couple, even when our kids were young, we always went on vacations. Maybe not for a couple years, but even just during middle school, always made time as a couple, even if it was just once a year around our anniversary to go on a vacation. But what are your thoughts on vacationing just as a couple rather than as a family, and as it also relates to date night? So if you can comment on date nights and vacation just as a couple.
I would be happy to. And let me just say that the reason you received that email about vacations is because I'm collaborating with a fabulous physician relationship coach, Dr. Kate Mangona, and the two of us are hosting retreats for couples. Our first one will be in Maui, October 2024 at the Four Seasons. It's going to be an incredible experience. So I'm all
Oh, that
about
sounds amazing.
vacations. What?
That
It
sounds
will be.
amazing.
It will be. And we have plans for one in Dallas, which is where Kate lives, and one in Napa, which is right where I live. And so we will be hosting retreats on a regular basis, but I'm just really excited to open enrollment for the Honeymoon 2.0 is the name of the retreat, which is exactly what it will be. So what I'm going to say about date nights and vacations is that they're only important when they're done well. And what I mean by that is that there are lots of people who have a regular date night, but if it's just time together doing more of the same, well, if you're not really connecting with one another, if things are bad, then a regular date night is great to get you to good. But if things are good, a date night in and of itself won't really change anything to get you to great. What really matters is being intentional and the quality of attention. If you go for dinner and a movie on a regular basis, I guess that's nicer than not doing it, but that will not transform a relationship. What transforms a relationship is being more present with one another, is paying attention to your own emotional feelings, your own sensations in your body, being curious about your partner, being vulnerable, really learning the fundamental skills that create emotional intimacy. So if you use your date night once a week to intentionally grow your relationship, well, that is phenomenal. But if you use your date night as like something on your to-do list in order to be with one another, well, maybe it gets you a break from your routine, but it doesn't fundamentally expand and amplify your relationship. And I feel similarly about vacations. I think it is essential to have time for the two of you to be on your own. I love that you've been doing that for so many years. It's relatively unusual and totally beautiful. And sometimes the vacation together, it's just a break from the routine. In fact, the first times my husband and I would spend just a night in the hotel, we would basically just sleep a good portion of the time. And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you need, that's great. But that just functions as more of a break from the routine. It doesn't specifically grow, fertilize, and amplify the relationship. So I think very often when people feel disconnected, they think date nights, vacation, new lingerie, a new sex position, that will transform the relationship. And those are always very short gains. They do not actually transform the culture of the marriage. They do not heat things up and bring more vitality to the relationship. What does that is the quality of presence, intention, attention, cultivating emotional intimacy, which naturally brings more closeness and sensual yearning. So I don't have a black and white answer to that because I think it's all in the quality of the experience.
I could talk to you for hours, but before we leave, can you just leave people with some what can you do at home, some to-do lists, some takeaways?
Yes, I would love to. And for anyone listening, if you've listened thus far, I really hope you use something that I share and actually apply it in your own relationship. And so the two things, I've referred to both of them, but I want to clarify them. One is to just be more curious with your spouse. Ask questions that you genuinely want to hear the answer to. And no matter how well you know one another, you both are continuing to grow and have new experiences. So if you're not sure where to begin, get yourself a deck of cards. You know, they're cards with questions, and just ask. And then the key is to listen generously, not to judge their answer, but just to appreciate that they're sharing more of who they are. And if your partner doesn't then ask you questions back, just go ahead and answer anyway. They didn't hear this podcast, they don't know that. And I really can't emphasize enough how impactful this is. I once gave a talk on how to connect more deeply with your spouse, and there was a woman in the audience who had been married for, I think, 32 years, and she actually hadn't intended to come to my talk. She was there for the talk afterwards. She arrived early. She thought she'd listen because she had a good marriage and she didn't need anything from me. But she heard me talk about the importance of curiosity and just putting attention on your partner and asking open-ended questions where there's no right or wrong answer. And she went home and she asked her husband a few questions, and she messaged me the next day and said it was extraordinary. Just a few questions, and they felt more intimate and more connected than they had in like 5 or 10 years, and they made love in a new way. I don't mean like new techniques, but like it felt just more deeply connected, all just through asking questions. Now, if you're in a high conflict marriage, asking some curious questions is not going to transform things. But if you're basically in a good marriage and you want to bring more juiciness to your relationship, being curious with your attention and asking open-ended questions really is more impactful than we're used to thinking. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is I'm going to be sort of gender typical for a moment. If you are a man and you want to enhance your relationship, pay more attention to what you are feeling and express that to your spouse. And if you are a woman, pay more attention to what you're feeling in your body and enjoy it. So, for a man to pay more attention to emotional feelings, I don't mean get all sappy, but just like if you feel angry, if you feel frustrated, if you feel joyful, just notice it. And if you want to, share it. And if you're a woman, pay attention to what is happening for your senses and allow yourself to experience the pleasure. And any of the things that I've just said will bring a very subtle pivot that enhances things. It'll be like adding salt to a meal. It's not a big deal, but it makes all the difference in how it tastes.
Yeah, that's some great advice and simple things that all of us could do. Where can people find you so they can just experience what I've experienced is you have so much great content out there for anybody. So.
AlexandraStockwell.com is my website, and from there you can find my book, Uncompromising Intimacy, my podcast, The Intimate Marriage Podcast. As you've so graciously said, I'm on all the social media platforms, and I write to my email list a lot with usable content. So, yeah, just find me at AlexandraStockwell.com, and if you want to work with me, you can find the way to do that too.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Her. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a quick 5-star review on your podcast platform. Your feedback means the world to us and helps others discover our show. Do you have questions or want to discuss a particular topic? You can reach us by emailing ask@dramiebrenner.com or calling 513-204-8403 and leaving a voicemail. We might feature your question or comment in an upcoming episode, so don't miss out on the chance to be a part of the conversation. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. We appreciate your support and can't wait to have you back with us next time. Take care and remember, your Healthy Her journey begins with you. This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute medical advice, the practice of medicine, nursing, or other healthcare services. No patient-physician relationship is formed. The information in the podcast and any references, material, or links are at the sole discretion of the listener and not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not delay or disregard obtaining medical advice for any medical diagnosis or issues that they may have and should seek medical care or advice from their healthcare provider for any such conditions.